This is Life Rattle. I'm your host, Lori Callis. Tonight, on Life Rattle number 1181, we continue from last week's program and present two more Life Rattle classics written and read by Kwai Lee. Kwai Lee, born in 1950, the youngest of nine children, grew up in Chadwalla Gully, a Chinese ghetto in Calcutta, India, where Lee's parents moved to from a village in southern China in the 1920s. Lee attended Chinese school in Calcutta until she was 14, then finished high school at an English school when she was 20. 2 years later, Lee's parents arranged their daughter's marriage to a Chinese man living in Toronto. Lee communicated with her future husband by letter for 6 months before she came to Canada to marry him as a letter bride. The marriage did not work. Lee left after 6 months. The friends she made at work helped her through this rough period as she reorganized her life. In 1978, Lee married her current husband. She took night courses toward her certified general accountancy, which she completed in 1988, then, in 1989, decided to work only part-time so that she could enroll at the University of Toronto, where she earned her BA and later her MA. Kwai Lee currently lives in Mississauga, travels extensively, and writes. Lee's writing creates a richly detailed tapestry. She deftly captures the sights, smells, and flavors of the cultural blend unique to the Hakka Chinese community in Calcutta. Let's listen now to tonight's first story, My Rooftop Terrace, written and read by Kwai Lee.
My Roof Terrace by Kwai Lee. My parents were born in a small but crowded village in southern China. My four brothers, four sisters, and I were born at 75 Benting Street in Calcutta. Our parents immigrated from China to India in the 1920s. I was born in 1950 when mother was 49 years old and thought she was finished with childbearing. Father aimed to make a fortune and return to China. He did make a fortune in shoemaking and bought a trunk full of nationalist Chinese bonds. When a communist government took over China, the bonds became worthless. Father died in 1955 and my mother in 1964. My parents lived at 75 Benting Street throughout their 30-odd years stayed in Calcutta. 75 Benting Street was in the older part of town. The building, like the neighboring ones, was long and narrow. The facade was, and still is, uniformly gray. Weather had worn off the whitewash and the tin concrete veneer, exposing the crumbling red bricks. Every morning, the neighborhood pigeons could be seen pecking at the remaining concrete in their search for a line. Our shoe shop, John Hing, fronted the street. The work area was just behind. The whole family, with my mother's first grandchild, lived at the back of the shop. The living quarters were my mother's and my sister-in-law's domain, while my eldest brother, Panda, who was 22 years old when father died, looked after the business. At age six and the baby of the family, I was always underfoot. My mother asked me to assist my brothers in the shop, and my brothers wanted me to help mother at the back. I compromised by perching on a counter, midpoint between the shop and the work area, and watching my brothers. My oldest brother, Panda, loved people. I once saw him having an animated discussion with six customers. They waved their arms, slapped their ties, and any parts of their neighbors within reach. Passers-by from the street joined in from the doorway of the shop. At the end of the 2 hours, Panda had sold only one pair of shoes. The British built buildings with high ceilings in India. and 75 Banting Street had a 15-foot ceiling. My father added a mezzanine floor to the work area. As a result, the ceiling height decreased to a little over 5 feet. The shoemaking lathes hung from the mezzanine ceiling in an inverted forest. When Qian, my brother 2 years younger than Panda, teased me, I snatched his books and ran under the mezzanine floor. He chased me. I stopped and listened for the sound of the lathes hitting my brother's head. At the dinner table that night, I repeated his curses in Hindi and Chinese. Mother and Panda had a long conversation with Qian afterwards. There was only one way to reach the mezzanine floor. A wooden ladder led vertically up to a dark hole. Panda used half of the mezzanine for storing the shoes, and my mother used the other half for casts of clothes and furniture, and lots of books. Chips, my brother 4 years my senior, and I enjoy going through the piles of dusty books. Sometimes sister-in-law had to ask us to move things around less energetically. Her bedroom was directly below where the books were stored, and the baby was sleeping. From the mezzanine, we had to climb an even steeper wooden ladder and go up through a hole onto the true ceiling of the building. My favorite playground, the rooftop terrace. The terrace ran the length of the building. In one corner, Panda had his two large pigeon coops. Every morning, he exercised his pigeons by waving his shirt on a dead 10-foot bamboo pole. As the buildings were so close together, his pigeons usually sat on another roof out of reach. Panda got more exercise than his pigeons. He also housed his prize fighting cockbirds on the terrace. Every afternoon, he sat at the edge of the terrace and massaged the leg and wing muscles of his birds. He usually whispers as she massages, "What a strong bird you are. Look at your leg muscles." He paused occasionally and looked down the valley way between two buildings. He called out greetings to those he knew. Panda knew a lot of people. Once he leaned so far over the side of the long wall in his socializing that the cockbird on his lap fell and landed on his friend's head. The friend blamed Panda's bird for his rapid loss of hair. Swallow, 6 years older than me, used to fly kites from the terrace. Chips joined in when he ran out of books. Our one-story building was surrounded by 4- and 5-storied ones, so Swallow and Chips had to replace many kites. Neighboring boys could be seen flying my brother's kites of the preceding days. Swallow and Chips also enjoyed raising fighting crickets. Swallow read somewhere that morning dew increased their fighting capability. He left his crickets on the terrace overnight in wire mesh boxes. Unfortunately, Panda's fighting birds usually woke up before Swallow, and they love crickets for breakfast. Swallow always maintained that Panda's fowls were victorious because of his dewy crickets. Something was always going on the street. The hawkers squatted on the narrow sidewalk so that pedestrians had to walk on the street with the cars, buses, rickshaws, and trams. In the afternoons, my sister, Lady, and I bought roasted peanuts, mangoes, or freshly crushed sugarcane juice from the hawkers and enjoyed our snacks on the terrace. We watched as people bargained with the hawkers, groups of children brought their snacks, and trams and cars slow down to avoid hitting the pedestrian, and the piles of fruit peelings and weak old sugarcane huts and wandering cows. The hawkers usually left the peels and sometimes the unsold fruits on the sidewalk and streets. The neighborhood cows and urchins enjoy browsing through the leavings. From the terrace, I also watch wedding processions, funerals, and government office workers in protest marches. The colorful weddings were the best. The bridegrooms sat on their rented horses, with musicians playing the latest movie songs. Dancers and acrobats followed. Someone once set off a firecracker too near the ear of a groom's horse, and the horse threw him in front of our shop. Sometimes I help my sister-in-law spread the washing on the wire lines. Propped up by bamboo poles, we turned the garments inside out so that the sunlight would not fade the color of the clothes. Every morning when it was not raining, the woman, helped by the children, hung the clothes out on terraces and balconies. We called our greetings to each other and exchanged news. On rainy days, lines were strung in bedrooms and kitchen. Loosely woven tall bamboo baskets could be placed inverted over a banked coal stove for clothes that were needed the next day. One day I did not bang the fire sufficiently, and my white school blouse acquired brownish scorch marks. Homework, especially essay writing, was less difficult when I did it on the terrace. The pigeons cooing, the clothing on the line snapping in the wind, the hawkers and shoppers shouting, and the car horns brought the words out onto the paper. The neighbor's building formed a blank wall on our side with a nice concrete seat running along it. This was the best side of the terrace and the coolest. The boys in the neighborhood picked on Chips. This was the seat Chips and I sat on after many of these altercations. He did not want Swallow to know about the fights. Swallow was, and still is, the most unswallow-like person. Liked to beat up the other boys. Sometimes he shook the tormentors' names out of Chips. He was very protective of his younger brother. During the summer months, the Calcutta Electricity Board rationed the power to the city. Almost every night, the CEB shut off the hydro in our neighborhood. Then the terrace became our bedroom. On nights when the moon was full, I would try to finish my books. I would also make up stories that always ended up with the moon. Sometimes Panda shouted conversations with neighbors on other terraces. Sister-in-law had to ask him to stop, otherwise the baby did not want to sleep. Chien, Lady, Swallow, Chips, and I grew up and left home. Swallow is the only one with his own terrace, but he does not have the time to put his imprint on it. He's too busy making money. I left for Canada as a letter bride. The marriage did not work out, and I spent a few years getting myself together. I revisited Calcutta in 1993. 75 Benton Street looked no different from what I remembered. Panda died 2 years ago. His widow now lives in the quarters behind the shop, together with my nephew, his wife, and two children. The terrace looks the same. The pigeon coops are still there, though empty of inmates. The wire clothes lines, propped up by bamboo poles, look like the same ones that I used so many times in the past. I heard a low murmur behind me and turned. Panda's eldest son sat cross-legged on the floor, massaging a cockbird's wing muscles and talking encouragingly to it.
That was Kwai Lee reading her story, A Rooftop Terrace. Let's listen now to Shamila, our second Kwai Lee classic tonight.
Shamila by Kwai Lee. I stood under the meager shade of the papaya tree in the schoolyard, fanning my face with my essay on man's first lunar landing, the popular essay topic for the 1970 class 11 students. The previous day, Shamila had arranged to meet me at 8 o'clock this morning, as she needed help with her math homework. Shamila gave me the dubious privilege of helping her because we were both 19 years old, two of the oldest students in class. I shifted the strap of my school bag to a less sweat-saturated spot on my shoulder and looked at my watch. It was 8:20. I wiped the sweat from my forehead and wished for rain. The monsoon, which usually floods Calcutta from May to September every year, was 2 months late. A gust of wind blew the dust and dead leaves around the schoolyard, and also blew away the flies and the mosquitoes hovering around my face, arms, and legs. They returned when the wind died. The bushes around the school and the grass in the yard looked brittle and brown. I looked at the cloudless sky. Another hot, dry day in Calcutta. I knew Miss Joseph, our school's music teacher, would choose showers of blessings later this morning at the assembly. We have sang the same hymn every morning for the last 2 weeks. A car horn sounded from the front gates. The doorman, snoozing on a stool leaning against the wall, got up and opened the rusty wrought iron gates to let the car into the school's compound. Shamila jumped out, her long braids and her school bags swinging from side to side as she hurried towards me. Shamila have big expressive eyes, a dimpled smile, smooth skin, and a well-developed figure that looked good even in a shapeless school uniform. Most of the girls in the class did not like Shamila. She loved to talk and always about herself. "I'm sorry, I have to share my maid with my cousin this morning, and my aunt Mina and her daughter arrived from Pune yesterday and they did not bring the servants, and my maid was late ironing my uniform and she forgot my breakfast." "Calm down, Shamila," I said. "You know, if you spend less time running after the servant, you would have more free time." Shamila rolled her eyes. "Don't be silly. I can't do ironing or cooking for myself. That's what the servants are for." We walked towards our classroom. "Look, Aunt Mina bought me these bracelets. Like them?" Shamila jiggled her right wrist under my nose. "She also brought me a rose-colored Banaras sari. It's so fine, you can really put it through a ring." According to Shamila, she belonged to one of the wealthiest families in Calcutta. Her oldest brother married the daughter of one of her father's friends, and his wife brought a large dowry into the family. 10 years ago, Shamila's father negotiated a match for her. His dowry for his daughter was generous. An apartment building in the southern part of Calcutta, 10 sets of jewelry. Shamila said that each set weighed about a kilogram. 2 cars, enough clothing to last a couple for their lifetime and furnishings for their apartments. The prospective bridegroom's father, however, insisted on a bright daughter-in-law. He wanted Shamila to get her senior Cambridge certificate before he would sign the marriage contract. SCC exams were set and administered by the school board in England. To sit for the exams, the students have to pass 3 years of preparatory studies. Even with the intensive study programs, the failure rate was high. Shamila hated school and had to repeat classes almost every year. Her family arranged for her to change schools every time this happened. So, at the age of 19, she had ended up in Dalhousie Girls' School, a not-so-exclusive institution. Years before, her mother had gone to the same school that Miss Chowdhury, our principal, had attended. Since then, Shamila's prospective father-in-law agreed to change the terms of the not-yet-signed marriage contract with an increased dowry from Shamila's family. Shamila only had to pass class 11, which would allow her to get into the final preparatory class for the senior Cambridge exams a year away. She did not have to sit for the actual SCC exam. Shamila told the class something about her fiancé every day. She spoke of his good looks, his family's wealth, and his wittiness, although she had never met or spoken to him. She saw him once through an upstairs window when he came to pay respects to his prospective in-laws. I quickened my steps as we walked towards our classroom, which was on the third floor of the main building. Shamila chatted on. Did you know what my fiancé tried to do last week? I shook my head. You remember my cousin Kami? I shook my head again. I told you about her yesterday. Shamila grabbed my school bag and stopped by the stairways. I removed Shamila's hand from the strap of my school bag and said, the assignment is due in half an hour or less. Did you look at it last night? She ignored my attempt to bring her back to the dreaded maths. Her brother goes to college with my fiancé. Last week, my fiancé waited by the candy shop across from our school's front gates for over an hour. He thought my family car picked me up outside the school gates. Shamila looked wistfully at me. I wish I knew he was outside that day. I knew that Shamila's father did not allow his daughter outside the building without a male relative in attendance. If you're thinking of going outside, don't. You know the doorman will report you to the principal. I warned. Shamila sighed and said dreamily, I'm sure my fiancé will let me go visiting and shopping by myself after we are married. What do you think? I started up the stairs. I think you should think about your math assignment. Let me copy your answers. She looked at her watch. Otherwise, I will not finish the homework before the maths class. No, some of my answers may be wrong, I said. We argued all the way to our classroom. In the end, I let her copy some of my answers. When Miss Banerjee returned the maths assignment to us a week later, I got an A. Shamila, a D. She did not speak to me for 2 weeks. Shamila's grades from the final exams were bad, but she did not worry. Her mother had invited the principal over for lunch last week, and Shamila told me how happy Miss Chowdhury was with her present. Finally, the last day of school came. 36 girls sat quietly in the classroom, waiting for Miss Chowdhury to announce the names of the next class 12 attendees. We waited in silence. We could hear the laughter and chatter from the classroom next to ours and the unusually loud traffic sounds from the street. One of the overhead fans made a clicking sound as the blades rotated. I tilted my head sideways to allow the breeze to cool the back of my neck and felt the sweat trickle down my back. I traced the initial VG carved on the left-hand side of my scarred decks and wondered for the 100th time who VG was. Miss Chowdhury walked in. Her face ran with sweat from climbing the two flights of stairs. She adjusted her sari at her shoulder and lowered her 200 pounds on to the chair facing us. The chair groaned and sagged. I looked down at my hands and bit back a giggle. Miss Chowdhury glared at us and wiped her face with her lace handkerchief. Part of her left eyebrow and eyeshadow came off, and her lipstick smeared across her right cheek. I looked down at my hands again. When Miss Chowdhury regained her breath, she took out her prepared speech. Her praises for the teachers and the students lasted 20 minutes. During this time, the students sat and sweated. Then she read out the names of the 20 girls who will be attending class 12 next year. Shamila's name was not among them. I looked back as I was going out of the front gate of the school. Shamila sobbed under the papaya tree as she waited for the family car. The ever-present wind threw sand and dust into my face. I turn away and wipe away my tears, blaming the wind and the dust. 3 months later, Shamila's father increased the dowry yet again, and she was married. Miss Chowdhury was not invited to the wedding. I later heard that Shamila's mother-in-law was very strict and rarely allowed Shamila to go out unaccompanied.
That was Kwai Lee reading her story, Shamila. That concludes Life Rattle number 1181. My name is Lori Callis. Arnie Achtman recorded Kwai Lee reading her stories. Life Rattle was created by Guy Allen and Arnie Achtman. Life Rattle will bring you more stories next Sunday night at 9 o'clock.